This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Political humorist P.J. O'Rourke begins his latest book, The Baby Boom, with this line: "We are the generation that changed everything." He's writing about 75 million Americans born between 1946, he was born a year after that, and 1964, who are pretty much responsible for the mess we see all around us today.
Baby boomers, of course, were born after the greatest generation and well before Generation X, Generation Y, and the millennials. According to O'Rourke, they're the generation that became obsessed with self and the personal, the generation who insisted that a passion for living should replace working for one.
P.J. O'Rourke has written for the National Lampoon, Rolling Stone, the Weekly Standard, the New York Times Book Review, among many other publications. He's the author of 15 previous books about everything from politics and economics to cars and etiquette. His latest is called The Baby Boom: How It Got That Way, and It Wasn't My Fault, and I'll Never Do It Again. He lives here in New England, but joins us today from New York City. And P.J. O'Rourke, great to have you on the program. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Great to be here.
It's so much fun, your book. And I'm wondering if you could just read for us very briefly from the very beginning of your prologue, where it begins with that great line, "We are the generation that changed everything," just down to the end of the second paragraph there.
I'm glad to. "We are the generation that changed everything. Of all the eras and epochs of Americans, ours is the one that made the biggest impression on ourselves. But that's an important accomplishment because we're the generation that created the self, made the firmament of the self, divided the light of the self from the darkness of the self, and said, 'Let there be self.' If you were born between 1946 and 1964, you may have noticed this yourself. That's not to say we're a selfish generation. Selfish means too concerned with the self, and we're not. Self isn't something we're just, you know, concerned with. We are self."
That's P.J. O'Rourke reading from the prologue from his new book, The Baby Boom: How It Got That Way, and It Wasn't My Fault, and I'll Never Do It Again. Listeners, we'd like to invite you into this conversation with P.J. O'Rourke. How do you define this sprawling generation born between the end of World War II and the early 1960s? What knits it together? What sets it apart from previous generations and those that followed? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. So let me pick up with you, P.J. O'Rourke, right at the end of that paragraph that you just read. "We are self." What do you mean by that? What defines this generation, this obsession with self?
I don't know if it's an obsession, really. I think we're just the first generation in history ever to have the means and opportunity, economic and social, to actually be who we wanted to be, as the Army used to say. The Army, I mean, I never put that ad campaign together very well in my head. But
I know what you meant. Be all that you can be. Right.
Yes. And you know, people say, well, what's the difference? What's the real difference between the baby boom and the greatest generation? And, you know, it turns out to be $10,000.
Now, what do you mean by that?
Well, median income, medium family income, not average family income, which can be highly distorted by the top and bottom figures, but family with half above and half below, the family right in the middle. Our families that we grew up in the baby boom were $10,000 a year richer than the median family income for the greatest generation kids. And not only were we that much richer, but as you go across the baby boom from start to finish, you see America on a steady trajectory of growth. And if you look at the greatest generation economic situation, it goes up, it goes down, it goes way up, it goes way down. So they grew up in an insecure time. They grew up in a poor time. Of course, they had the Depression and the war. And the baby boom, for its first 15, 16 years, has got everything going right for it.
Year after year.
Yeah. And so we got to do what we wanted to do. We got to be what we wanted to be, for good or for ill.
Yeah. Now tell me about the perspective you bring to the subject of baby boomers. You were born at the very beginning of the boom we mentioned, 1947, middle of the country, from a middle income family. How did that background shape your perspective on this topic?
Well, I think that it just made me, not a spokesperson, but it made me a good person to look at this thing. Not a good person, but maybe the right person to look at this thing. Because as you say, I'm just regular in every way, down to geographically. I grew up about 120 miles from the population center of America. And my family did it spot on, had the median income from the time. And so there's a memoir aspect to this book, but yeah. It's not memoir in, you know, mom beat me with a golf club, the way I think memoirs have to be by law, as far as I can figure. I'm trying to seed other people's memories. I'm trying to use my memories of not to show how I'm different, but to show how we're all alike, to sort of use it as yeast in the bread, little yeast from me into the bread of your memory.
Of course, when we talk about the baby boom generation, we're talking about a lot of people, 75 million.
We are.
You know, we're talking about people like you who were born in 1947 and people who were born in 1964. And I like the way you divide them up into freshmen, juniors, sophomore, and seniors. And I'm wondering if you can just walk us through the sort of generations within the generations.
I thought that was the appropriate way to divide up the baby boom. A generation that refuses to grow up would be by high school class. You know, the seniors are the 46, born in the late 40s, and we're the lead players here. We're riding the bow wave of the baby boom's voyage of exploration. But we're also more closely tethered to the Greatest Generation. After all, we're born right after World War II.
Right.
And so what happens to the senior class of the baby boomers is we get sort of, in effect, keel-hauled by this experience. And we've turned out now.
Now, what does that mean? I should know what that means, but I need to be reminded what that means.
Means being tied to a rope and dragged under a boat,
okay,
as punishment.
Good image.
A traditional old British Navy punishment for misbehaving, with all the barnacles and seawater involved. And so if we turn out like a little shaky and soggy, you know, now that we're in our 60s, it's understandable. And, you know, Hillary Clinton and Cheech Marin, these are both
of Cheech and
senior
Chong
class.
Fame, right. Yeah.
Of Cheech and Chong fame, yes. These are senior class baby boomers.
Now, let me just read one thing before we can move on.
Sure,
and I would have
sure.
had you read this, but I've got it right in front of
me.
No,
go for it.
The seniors. We'd be sad about getting old if we weren't too busy remarrying younger wives, reviving careers that hit glass ceilings when children arrived, and renewing prescriptions for drugs that keep us from being sad. And we'll never retire. We can't. The mortgage is underwater. We're in debt up to our Rogaine for the kids' college education, and it serves us right. We're the generation who insisted that a passion for living should replace working for one. That's a great quote. I love that.
Thank you. I kind of enjoy it myself, even if I did write it.
But that's, you're sort of being hard on yourself. I mean, your particular
I'm speaking truth to power. I mean, the power happens to be me, so it's like I'm not in much danger from speaking the truth. But nonetheless, yeah, that's my situation.
All right. So move on. So those are the seniors.
Oh, yeah. So then you go on to the junior class, and who are often the younger siblings of the senior class. And these they're really more intense about the – especially when you get to a period like the 60s. They're more intense about the baby boom way of life than the original baby boomers were. They're the real – you know, the sort of the hippie, groupie, shoeless, ragamuffin, Haight-Ashbury types generally come from that next group. And, walking around shoeless, eventually they found some shoes and wandered into Silicon Valley. You know, they never did find their neckties.
Bill Gates and Steve Jobs.
That's Bill Gates and Steve Jobs. That most crazy acting part of the baby boom turns out to be also the most dynamically creative.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the sophomore class.
These are folks born in the late 1950s, right?
Born in the late 1950s, and they had really seen the baby boom in action, and they'd kind of seen that, you know, what worked in general terms didn't always work specifically when the bong set fire to the beanbag chair. Like, they calmed down and wised up a little bit. You know, some, at college, the sophomore class actually went to class. It's like some of them even snuck off and got MBAs. And they kind of stick in my mind as the authors of the preppy handbook.
Yeah.
That's the sophomore class.
So I got to admit, this is my class. I like the way you write about this. Sophomores gladly accepted sex, drugs, rock and roll, and the deep philosophical underpinning thereof. But they'd seen enough of the baby boom in action to realize that what works in general terms doesn't always work when the bong sets fire to the beanbag chair.
It's so true. And then you have this kind of strange group that comes at the end of the baby boom. I mean, don't mean they're – actually, they're probably more normal acting than the rest of the baby boom. Yeah. But this is our president and his wife, the freshman class of the baby boom. And they just sort of take all of the baby boom universe as a given, as a granted. I mean, they think the world was always like this. And so they just sort of swim in this sea of baby boom hooey, not knowing there's any land, you know. And it's that Rupert Brooke poem, you know, in that heaven of all their wish, there shall be no more land, say fish, you know. And so they're, I don't know whether they actually – they technically fit into the baby boom, but in a way, I don't relate to them very well.
Yeah. Listeners, we're talking with the very prolific and humorous political satirist P.J. O'Rourke about his new book, The Baby Boom. How do you define this sprawling generation born between the end of World War II and the early 1960s? Give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Is it your feeling, P.J. O'Rourke, that that baby boomers have generally made a mess of things, or how should we think?
No,
about
actually,
what we've
it's
done?
Not. It's not. I mean, I kid my generation and myself a lot. I give myself and my fellow travelers a lot of grief, but in point of fact, we live in a much kinder, much more decent, much more accepting world than the greatest generation bequeathed to us. I mean, the whole our attitudes and the world's attitude, or you know, America's attitudes at least, you know, things like sexuality, things like race, things like religion. I just notice it with my own kids. I mean, they use gay as a simple descriptive term, as if you were saying tall. You know, I mean, it carries no weight with them whatsoever. They don't really even seem to notice race much. I mean, it doesn't, you know, it's be something like, you know, does this color blouse go with my skin? You know, I mean, that's how important it is to them, which is not to say not at all. We're a reasonably religious family. I mean, we do our best to get to Mass, but I can't imagine my children making any derisive comment about somebody's religion.
Yeah,
I would be amazed to hear them make that kind of remark.
I was struck by one of the things though that you're a little self-deprecating about your generation, our generation, and that is you write very amusingly about how the baby boom generation takes credit for a lot of things that they don't really deserve to take credit for because they weren't really responsible for them. I mean, things
that
like
is the truth.
Like civil rights, like, you know, great.
We didn't fight that battle.
Yeah, it was fought before we got here.
It was fought before we got there. We didn't fight the battle for feminism, really. Mm-hmm. That was mostly people who were older than we were.
Well, explain that confusion. How did we get this idea that these are values that were so firmly planted in the ground by the baby boomers?
Well, it's a little bit like electronics and computers. We didn't invent those either, but we figured out how to make them work. We didn't invent, we didn't make the fight against a racist society. We didn't make a fight against a sexist society. We didn't even lead the fight on gay rights. But we figured out how to make it work. That seems to be the genius of the baby boom, which is why Bill Clinton is our most baby boomish president. The amount of things that he managed, again, for good or for ill,
the things he managed to make work. Because don't you consider Bill Clinton? I know you say this a little bit tongue in cheek. You talk about him being a sort of a successful president, but perhaps the worst baby boomer ever.
Yeah, he seems to embody almost all of the qualities of the baby boom: good, bad, and indifferent. he contains multitudes.
What about, who's the greatest baby boomer ever in your pantheon?
I really don't think there is one. You know, it's not a great man generation. You know, and if you look back to the generations that produced great men, Churchill and Eisenhower and FDR, They were bad generations. They were doing, you know, it's bad times and bad things happening that create great men. And
that's interesting.
Happy people, happy generation doesn't create greatness. And let's thank God for that.
P.J. O'Rourke, we've got some callers that would love to get in on this
sure.
conversation. We're talking to P.J. O'Rourke. He's the author of The Baby Boom, How It Got That Way, and It Wasn't My Fault, and I'll Never Do It Again. Let's go to Nicholas, who's calling from Northborough. Nicholas, you're on the air.
Hi, Nicholas.
Hi. I heard you talking earlier about how the latest, the freshman baby boomers, they don't even know that they're part of the generation. They just accept that as the reality. Now, I'm 23, and I'm just wondering how my generation compares or contrasts to this baby boomer generation, because I don't even have any perspective on it at all.
Nicholas,
well,
thanks for the call.
I guess we'll know that when you move out of our basements. Yeah, I'm just giving you grief. I'm sorry. Yeah, to tell the truth, it's a little soon to say. If you were to examine the baby boom when it was 23, you know, when I was 23, drug-addled anti-establishment maniacs, you know, with horrible haircuts, you know, jumping around like loonies. I don't think you would have foreseen like the amazing changes that we ended up making, especially in economics, you know, in the whole internet field, and also the internationalization of economics, and I don't think you would have foreseen that, or you might have foreseen that we would be very restrained about making war. That might have been evident.
Yeah.
But I think it's way too early to judge your generation. It will,
but
come back to me in 60 years. You know?
So Nicholas, there's the order from P.J. O'Rourke. But P.J. O'Rourke, how should Nicholas feel about the world bequeathed to him from this generation?
Angry and grateful.
Okay.
Angry and grateful is how I should feel. Grateful for the go-along, get-along, decency, basic, gentle inclusiveness of the baby boom. And damned angry that we're eating up all of his resources with Social Security mm-hmm. and Medicare. And the only thing I can really say to excuse us, Nicholas, is that we didn't invent those programs. Yes, we are taking hoggish advantage of them. But they came from, you know, the great society in the 60s and from the New Deal in the 30s. And so they weren't the situation may be our fault, but the ideas behind it were not.
Let's go to Jeremy, who's calling from Dedham. Jeremy, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Jeremy.
In your conversation. And, you know, I'm my parents are baby boomers. My father's born 45, and my mother's born 51. And talking about the class, the difference in classes is incredible, because my father was the guy who walked around with no shoes and sort of bought into the whole 60s hippie mentality. And my mother, who's born 51, you know, only 6 years later, is the professional, went to nursing school, got her master's degree, and... The difference is just staggering.
Hmm. It's funny about that. It does change quickly. And, of course, it varies greatly. I mean, I'm grossly oversimplifying when I talk about the birth cohorts. But it didn't take long for the baby boom to kind of get over its looniness. You know, we think this of the 60s as this, you know, as a decade. In fact, it was more like sort of 3.5 years from the times that major anti-war protests and a lot of pot arrived on campus until the U.S. got out of Vietnam. You know, it really – the whole thing lasted 3 or 4 years. And then – well, and then there was disco, and I don't know how to excuse that.
That's one I don't think you need to take responsibility
for. Let's not go there, yeah.
You I don't know. Thanks, Jeremy, for that call, by the way. It reminds me of – there's a great quote in your book where you say there are some things that the baby boom has done that we're really proud of that we're not proud of. We used up all the weird. And I want
we
you to.
We used up all the weird.
Yeah. This is
because
what
it is.
Yeah, go ahead. Explain
it,
that.
It
I
is
love
the right. It is the right of each young generation of kids coming along to shock and horrify their parents, usually through some minor fashion statement or something, or their use of language or something. But every generation has the right to, like, upset the old folks with their newfangled ways, whether it's, you know, wearing colorful socks or whatever it may be, or parting their hair in the middle. But every generation does that. Every generation gets to act a little weird in the eyes of their parents. But by the time the Generation X comes along after the baby boom, we used up all the weird, you know, weird beards, we grew them, you know, weird haircuts, we had them, weird words, we said them, weird thoughts, we thought them, you know. And poor Generation X was left having to, like, pierce their body parts and, like, give themselves tattoos, and, which really must have hurt.
Well, it shows there's still,
I apologize,
there's still room for new weirdness out there.
It turns out there is. Yeah. Yes, it turns out there is.
You write that for all the self-involvement and egotism that baby boomers have, it's not a power-hungry generation.
No, I think that's an interesting side. You know, I mean, if you look at the worst things that have been done through history by mankind, it mostly has to do with abuse of power, you know, abuse of social power, abuse of economic power, abuse of political power. And the baby boomers we're kind of a greedy generation. I mean, we want it all. You know, we want to have experiences. We want to have enlightenment. You know, we want to have exercise and good health. We even want to have a lot of money. But it's not really – power has not been our thing. And you can tell by the quality of baby boomers that have wound up in Washington. I mean, I think I can say that in a fully bipartisan way. You know, if you think – best and brightest? Are those the best and brightest from our generation that are down there running Washington right now?
Hmm.
No.
Good question.
I see no evidence of it.
I'm wondering, P.J. O'Rourke, to the children of baby boomers listening right now, we had one on the air. Actually,
yes.
We've had a couple on the air. Do you have advice as to how to avoid some of the mistakes of your generation, of the baby boom generation, of our generation?
I don't think they need it. You know, probably I'd be the wrong person to get it from anyway. I don't think they need it. I think they have looked at sort of the financial imprudence of the baby boom, and they have kind of looked at the excesses of the baby boom. And I think in many ways they're when I look at younger generations, and now they're getting to be that they're all younger generations, you know, there aren't many older generations left, I see some really steady, hardworking, focused people who spend way too much of their time with their nose poked in the iPhone, and who do have all these funny piercings and tattoos, which I disapprove deeply. No, I really think that we've got that one thing that you can – if the proof of a generation is in its children, then maybe we should ramp down our estimation of the greatest generation to, like, the okie dokie generation and actually maybe improve our opinion of the baby boom, because I think we turned out some great kids.
Finally, we literally have like 20 seconds left, but you ended up liking – I mean, the more you sort of looked into this and thought about it, you ended up liking the baby boom generation. Did that surprise you?
I ended up liking – it did. It did. I started out much more antagonistic. I think you can even tell from a little bit of prologue.
Yeah.
And I wound up with a greater appreciation of, not myself, but of my age cohort.
Well, P.J. O'Rourke is the former editor-in-chief of the National Lampoon, the best-selling author of 16 books, including The Baby Boom, How It Got That Way, and It Wasn't My Fault, and I'll Never Do It Again. P.J. O'Rourke, thank you so much. What a delight. Great having
Anthony,
you.
Anthony, thank you.
And listeners, stay with us. Much more to come. WBUR's David Boeri on the case of Ibrahim Todashev, shot dead during a police interrogation last spring. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.